And it is 26 minutes. We're getting a little late start today, 26 after the hour on a Transcendent Tuesday. Dr. Don Clark has joined us. Don is a biochemist, a member of the board at Creation Moments, amongst other boards. Isn't that true, Don? Are you still on other boards, too?
Yes, I am, actually. That's okay. Yes, I am. I did resign from one board, but I'm still on other boards.
The guy, this is a busy guy. We're talking about Christian ministry boards. He is all over. He goes to Cuba. Are you going to go to Cuba this year? You haven't mentioned Cuba this year.
Oh, Cuba is so locked down, and they're in dire straits. As a matter of fact, that country needs prayer. They're running out of food. They can't get food. Of course, the government's not allowing visitors, and so it's a big problem down there. We're trying to get them a container of food, but it's complicated. Everything to do with Cuba is complicated.
Yeah. Well, we're not talking about Cuba today, but we're talking about something else rather complicated. They're called biomolecules. The good news is, it seems there is something that creationists and evolutionists have found in common, and that is how things started, or more accurately, how they didn't start by accident. Don is a biochemist, by the way, and knows about this stuff. He knows about, have you ever seen a biomolecule, Don?
Have I ever seen one? Yeah. Well, of course. You know, we had three-dimensional models of biomolecules. I worked on biomolecules for my dissertation and my thesis when I was going to college. And so biomolecules, they can be anything from, glucose, for example, is a biomolecule, and any molecule of life, really, to as complex as proteins and DNA, which is
Does it have to have carbon as one of the elements?
It's got typically it's got carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. Those are the organic elements that make up organic life. And there's sulfur. There's a lot of sulfur in your cells. There's a lot of there's silicone, for example, and all kinds of other things are necessary. Zinc and magnesium and manganese are necessary, for life. And the real question here is, well, if the evolutionists and creationists agree that you've got to have biomolecules and there had to be more.
An evolutionist would say if you had a little pile of carbon and a little pile of hydrogen and oxygen and zinc and those other things you mentioned, that somehow if a breeze blew over it and mixed them up, there would be a cell, a living cell.
That's what they started with. Obviously, because cells exist and we exist and life exists, then all you need to do is just put the building blocks of the cell together, and voila, you got life. I mean, that sounds wonderful, but that's the story of molecules molecules to life, and that's been proven. I mean, that's just ridiculous to even think that now that we know so much about the cell. We've got thousands and thousands of different types of molecules within the cell, and each of those molecules have their own specific function. We have within the cell, for example, the little machines that do a specific part of the cell's job. Fred Hoyle, for example, who is an atheist, by the way, estimated that the probability of having life from a collection of molecules is one chance in 10 to the 40,000.
Sounds.
10 to the 40,000. So, in other words, it's
10 with 40,000 zeros after it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
10.00000.
Not likely at all. And then he compared, and this wasn't even a fair comparison. He compared the likelihood of life originating on Earth to that of a tornado going through a junkyard and assembling a 747 airplane. Well, even if that could happen, and we know we've never seen that, I've never seen that, and I think we, you know, the newspapers would report that if it indeed happened. Never seen it in Oklahoma, where they have, there's Hurricane Tornado Alley, for example. of course, we know tornadoes tear up things. They don't assemble things into specific, very specific ways. But let's take that analogy one step further. Even if you had the 747, it would have a dead battery. Right. I mean, it came from a junkyard. The battery is not going to be any good. So, you need to charge up the battery or batteries. You need to fuel the plane in order to get it going. And you need one other element, and that's called intelligence. And that would be a pilot in order to pilot the plane. So even if you had all of the parts and somehow all of those parts came together, the plane still wouldn't fly because you don't have the other three things that I've mentioned. Well, it's kind of the same thing with life. If you had all of the biomolecules that make up life, and we know now that at least the human DNA is made up of 3 billion base pairs, which codes for tens of thousands of proteins, we know that there is assemblage of polysaccharides or sugars linked together in various forms, and those are very important. And then you've got the mitochondria, which if you've taken basic biology now, you know that that's the powerhouse of the cell. So that would be, the mitochondria would be equivalent to the plane's battery, for example, which supplies the energy for the cell. In this case, the mitochondria provide adenosine triphosphate, which is a chemical, of course. It's a chemical that supplies chemical energy to the cell and allows the cell to do the function that it does. And cells are very, very complex. They, as I said earlier, they have a lot of little machines within them, and each machine does its own part.
Each cell is destined to perform a specific function too, right? I mean, there's a myriad of functions.
Yes, it can. It depends on the type of cell. But each cell is programmed. For example, if you have a muscle cell, of course, it's got actin in it, and it's got long fibers of proteins that contract when calcium is poured into the system. And of course, the calcium is moderated through the cell wall and all of this stuff in order to contract the muscle at the appropriate time. You've got different functions that clean up stuff. You've got your white blood cells that go around and chew up things that are in your blood. You got clotting agents, and the story just keeps going on and on. But even within a cell, one of the basic elements is called ribosomes, and the ribosome is the enzyme that translates the genetic code into the amino acid sequence code of a protein. And these ribosomes, there's a whole bunch of them that are on tubules, if you will, and they kind of go along the messenger RNA that comes out of the nucleus of the cell. And as they're going along, out of the other side comes your protein sequence, as amino acids get linked together in the specific sequence that they are needed in order to function within the cell. But even after the sequence has been made, the protein is scooped up by other types of proteins. These are called barrel proteins that actually have to fold, have their purpose is to fold the protein into the right configuration in order for it to have its appropriate function. So all of these little machines that are within your cell just didn't take place, by happenstance, but actually, it had to have been kick-started, if you will, in order to do its function.
Well, let me ask a related question then. If it, you mentioned, like, for a muscle cell, it has a specific design to an end. In other words, it was designed to become a muscle. If it was the first such cell ever created, who determines the need for a muscle cell? I mean, there has to be a reason to design it in this way. I'm giving myself away. There has to be a reason for it to have been constructed so to serve a specific purpose that's yet ahead of it in time. So would it know how to do that?
Exactly. How did it know? Well, it needed to know. Well, why did it need to know? You know, you've got intelligence upon intelligence upon intelligence upon intelligence. You know, we started with Hoyle's, one in 10 to the 40,000 power. And now you're even adding more complexity. So every time you ask a question like that, it adds another zero to that.
Yeah, and I think I got my math wrong. It would be a decimal point followed by 40,000 zeros and then a one. Those would be the odds of this happening. I don't know how they figure that. That's this kind of an imaginary number, I think. But it basically means impossible. So we have something that both creationists and evolutionists agree on. That is, it didn't start by chance.
Well, except that the evolutionists now take it and say, okay, well, now we have the cell, and then from the cell, of course, we've got, we kind of wave our hands and say, okay, that cell eventually turned into, an amoeba, which eventually turned into ultimately a fish, and the fish crawled out of the water and became amphibian. And the amphibian then became a bird, and then, some became monkeys, and then ultimately we have the humans coming from the monkey line. That's a whole different, but it's all story. It's all story. There's no factual evidence for any of that other than, gee, that looks like this other creature, so therefore it must be on the same branch of the tree as that creature. But that's it's kind of a bottom-down approach. God, of course, creates things from the top down, and, he created things in the order that he said that he created them in Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2 is a more defined description of how he created man and what purpose he created man for. Anyway, you've got all of this complexity going on. Now, one of the basic questions, once you have all of these, let's assume then somehow, eons of time, we've got all these biomolecules that will make up life. So we've got the ribosomes, we've got the DNA molecule, at least a RNA, which is beginning to start some type of genetic code. And all of these molecules are thrown into a lipid bilayer, to some type of cellular type of structure. And so therefore we should have life, right?
Well, I suspect there's a catch here.
There is a catch, and the catch is you need energy to boost the system out of equilibrium.
That's the part of this article that fascinates me. It's talking about a Nobel Prize winning chemist and evolutionist, and I'm not sure I can pronounce his last name. Ilya. This very could have been Russian, I suppose. Prigogine, maybe. He's famous for pointing out, I'll just quote this, he's famous for pointing out two aspects of life. It is dissipative and far from equilibrium. All living organisms are dissipative, that's constantly decaying to a lower state, per the second law of thermodynamics, and need a constant supply of energy to repair the decay and operate, just like that 747 needs aviation fuel. Once it's created, it doesn't go on forever. This is not a perpetual motion machine. This needs outside things to come in and bring it to life.
It does. And what he means by, okay, so we have these molecules, especially, you know, the macromolecules are constantly decaying, and they have to be built up, or you have to make new ones. So in order to make new ones, you need energy for that. But you also need all of the machinery and all of the manufacturing capabilities to be operating in order to make new stuff. It just doesn't happen by chance. And being far from equilibrium means, you know, if you've got your car, for example, stuck in a rut, how difficult is it to get your car out? You don't just give it a little push and expect it to be, you know, to come out of the rut. You've got to really push it pretty hard, or pull it pretty hard, in order to get it, the wheels stuck out of the rut, so you can keep going. Well, that's similar to what has to happen within the cell, except it's, you know, it's magnitude probably tens of thousands of times more, because you've got a lot of you've got tens of thousands of molecules that are stuck in the rut, and you're trying to get them unstuck from the rut, and so you have to give them big pushes, and taking tens of thousands of molecules and giving them big pushes means that you got a tremendous push in order to get the whole system running, running again. And so it is, you know, it's interesting that every aspect of the life that you look at, because what do we call life? I mean, that's a basic question. What do we call life? We know that life has to repair itself. So that's one aspect that Nobel Prize chemist suggested. But the other aspect is, of course, far from equilibrium. But what other aspects of life, what makes the difference between saying this is alive and this is dead?
Yeah, that was a basic element of my high school biology class, and I can't remember the complete definition, but there were several parts for a scientific definition of life. One, a creature, because that implies creation, a thing needs to be able to reproduce itself. It eliminates waste. It uses energy. It respirates somehow, although I'm not sure what that means. Does that mean oxygen necessarily? To it breathes oxygen, or it requires oxygen as an energy source. In effect, isn't that what we do with oxygen? Doesn't it enable us to use energy?
Well, oxygen is part of the system, but glucose is the energy source that gets into the mitochondria, and of course it uses oxygen to oxidize the glucose into ultimately carbon dioxide, which is a more oxidative state. Speaking in chemical terms, it just means that you've burnt up the glucose. So it'd be like you take some glucose and you fire it up, and it burns, and when it burns, if it burns completely, it produces carbon dioxide. And so that's what the cell does, but you're not burning up. I mean, some people get hot, but they don't get hot so hot that they catch on fire.
but we do have a normal body temperature, and it just occurs to me, I've never thought of how that happens. What generates that heat?
Well, it's all these chemical reactions, and the primary chemical reaction is turning glucose into carbon dioxide, and in that process, creating energy that the cell uses. And you learn that in your basic course in biochemistry. It's the Krebs cycle, and Dr. Krebs was the first one to describe it. And so you've got, and that's just a very basic cycle, but it's the cycle of taking glucose and turning it into carbon dioxide, and you get energy out of that, because you are oxidizing glucose, or essentially you are burning glucose for your fuel to run the rest of your cells. So you mentioned one thing of life, which was, you got to be able to reproduce yourself. Life wouldn't be much without having the capability of reproducing. And so cells have to reproduce. That's the basic form of reproduction. I mean, it's asexual, obviously, but cells have to reproduce themselves because they are degrading. So you have to reproduce. You have to have the whole mechanism in the cell has to duplicate and then split apart. There's a whole mechanism involved with these cells even reproducing. The cell has to repair itself. That's another aspect of life. The cell has to have some form of carrying on the information from one cell to another cell, which, of course, we now know is in the DNA, and all cells have DNA. And the DNA has to transcribe into the get translated into RNA, and then it's the RNA that gets transcribed into the protein sequence.
And by the way, the word I was searching for is organism. That's what separates us from rocks, right?
Yes. Well, there's a lot of things that separate us from rocks, but yes, an organism is you normally think of as a kind of a standalone system, living system.
But it's synonymous with life. Only an organism can have life, can be alive.
Yes, whether it's whether it's a bacteria, for example, or a protozoa, or a fly, or humans, or a monkey, whatever, those are organisms. Some more complex than others, obviously. So there are all kinds of things that make up life, and life looks very, very different from one species to the next, or one kind of animal from the next, or from the smallest one cell organism to billion cells, trillion cells. I don't know how many cells we have in our body, but somebody does, I'm sure. And anyway, it's a bunch of cells working together in order to form a complete organism. And those cells within a human, for example, and within animals as well, have differentiated. So you go from a common cell, and then that common cell differentiates, in our case, as an embryo, into the various types of cells that they're going to be, whether they're going to be skin cells or whether they're going to be bone cells or heart cells or whatever, or an eye or whatever it happens to be. These cells then have to have the ability to differentiate, and all of this must be encoded within the DNA. And so that makes our DNA quite complex, because not only do you have the information built into the DNA as to different types of molecules need to be made for these different types of cells, but the system has to be either turned on or turned off.
Yeah, we're still missing something. I want to emphasize that point as we draw this to a close. But once you have all the pile of carbon and oxygen and the mixed, and you've got the cell, or you've got the 747, or whatever the organism happens to be, and if it's alive, it's not the same as life. In other words, life came to it, life enervates it, life motivates it, life uses it, but the cell is not life itself.
There are 30 trillion cells in the human body, give or take one or two.
I've got a few extra here, I think, but
some of us have more than others.
Yeah.
So there you go. So yes, there. So as we are wrapping up today's program, we must come back to what Genesis says. And in chapter 2, God says he breathed the breath of life into Adam's nostrils. So he breathed the breath of life. And so there was something else that he put into Adam, and for him to come from, it says, of course, it formed him from the from the dust of the earth, and so we have this physical body of Adam, but he did not come to life until God breathed the breath of life into him. Which brings me back to the other point, which I made when we were going through Genesis, for example, in the New Testament, of course, we have Ananias and Sapphira, and their breath of life was taken away from them. They had perfectly healthy living bodies before their breath of life was taken, and then after God's Spirit takes the breath of life away from them, they collapse and they're dead. So it's not the pile of molecules, it's not even having the pile of molecules, biomolecules, organized correctly within the cell, and it's not, you know, all of these other things. There is yet another aspect of life that evolutionists will never explain, and a naturalist will never explain, because that part is the breath of life that God breathed into living things, in particular into man.
I have a metaphysical question for you, and I don't expect an answer to this, but it'd be a good thing to go out on. Is spirit the same as life? I would have to answer no, because there are living things that we don't think have spirits, that God blew the breath of life into a man. We're made in his image. We must be different somehow than other organisms. Does the spirit create life, or is the spirit life itself?
Well, that's a good question. The spirit, of course, the spirit part of man is the part part of our soul. Part of our soul is the part that kind of controls our bodies, for example. But the other part is the characteristic of us that makes us unique. That with the spirit, with our spirit, then will be, if we believe in Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior, will be with God forever, for eternity. So that lives on. The physical body won't. Now, it's interesting that when Jesus comes back, of course, if we have died, if we've fallen asleep before he returns, we will have our new bodies again, and we'll rule and reign with him for 1,000 years. So, interesting questions, and, we get into the spirit realm, and, you know, what are angels? Angels are spirit beings. So there are individual, you know, spirit beings that God created.
That'd make a good topic maybe for next time, angels.
Well, maybe so.
We'll see. We're talking with Dr. Don Clark, a biochemist, again, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and want to recommend their website to you. It is creationmoments.com, and you'll see the reservoir of information, scientific information, that supports the biblical story of creation. You find it fascinating. You find it convincing. And if you're a Christian in particular, this equips you to explain things to the non-believers and to the evolutionists. So you might want to pay him a visit, creationmoments.com. Don, appreciate your time, expertise, and your heart. As always, we'll look forward to next Tuesday. Okay?
Okay. Very good. Y'all have a blessed week.
You too. Bye-bye.